We can talk about that 100K slip. And
yeah, that's
I talk about the slip not because I want 100K off it. That is really not the reason. I talk about the slip because of how I did it.
Hey, what's up, everybody? A really special episode of the Risk Takers podcast. A very, very famous, or you know, biggest star yet. We had Elf on last week. We're topping it this week in terms of reach. We got Jay Farr here. Thanks for joining me, man.
For sure, man. Super excited for this one. Big fan of your content. I'm glad I kind of caught into your following a few months ago. We've had a few conversations back and forth, and yeah, I know you get it, and I definitely appreciate the content you provide. It's incredible, man.
Dude, very appreciative. And yeah, I've really enjoyed JFAR, and I've been DMing back and forth, and we've had, this has been a long time coming. I think we agreed to try and do this like a month ago, and then I had a little bit of backlog of guests, and finally we got here. But I've been looking forward to this for months. And when you first came onto my radar, we'll start with the heavy hitting stuff. Let's do it right into it. I was just telling JFAR about this. I was at the movies, and I was new to Twitter, so I didn't know who you were at the time. Even though you hit that big slip going back, I realized that was you. We'll talk about that later. But my phone was blowing up. I was like, what's happening to Plus EV Twitter? It's crazy. Like, there's fires in the streets. And it was like a bunch of people that are my friends. Some have been guests on the pod, were all up in your comments on something you said about Plus EV betting. And I remember reading it and messaging Brett Johnson from Hot Streak, who was the forgotten pod guest. We had to take his podcast down. And they're being like, yeah, I agree with JFAR. I'm like, I totally agree. Like, he's right here. Mm-hmm. But you were just fending off all of Plus EV Twitter by yourself.
Man, I was going to war. I really was.
I remember that one meme where it's just like you and like the Braveheart
meme. The Jon Snow meme. Yeah.
The Jon Snow meme. Yeah.
That's exactly how I felt, man. That's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
But you know what it is? I mean, so the tweet went like this. It was, sports books can't be solved solely by using math. And I picked my words very carefully in this tweet. It was short but sweet, but I picked my words very carefully, because it wasn't to say that you can't make a profit just using math, or that you can't catch an edge just by using math, because we know all these things are obviously true. There's people that just drop lines all day, completely top-down style, and get the best price or something, and you're going to probably make some money off of that if you could just pick lines like that. But my thing was saying that there's no way you get the most optimal bang for your buck of sports betting just by doing this. And that's just very hard to disagree with, in my opinion. Because how could you say that just this one style is just going to perfect everything and get the most money out of it? If that were true, then for one, it would be fixed, because sports would want to just let that
too
happen.
Easy.
Yeah, too easy. And two, we'd have all these Odd Jam subscribers in Lambos right now. Like, I mean, just completely just taking over South Beach, Miami, you know? Like, so obviously there's just way more nuance to sports betting than that. And that's the point I was trying to get across. And every single person I responded to, I basically just repeated that. And they kept coming in my face. I saw some pickets from, like, I saw like a week-long picket once. Like, what kind of data is that? So you won for a week and now you have to solve sports betting. It was a crazy night. But the good thing out of that is that we linked up with each other off that. And I think definitely was a good fire starter, I would say.
Dude, that was. Because then I was like, I like retweeted your tweet. And I was like, yeah, no, this is definitely right because of XYZ or something along those lines. And then we were started DMing and whatnot. But I remember being like, this is – it's an important topic because there is a lot of value, as you said, to line shopping. Like, I'm sure that you would line shop on top of your process. Of course. We're all going to try and find the best price, and we're all trying to be aware of what the market's doing. It's just about stacking. It's like I wrote a tweet today about specializing, and it was like, learn how to be top down, take those tools, and then on top of it, specialize in a market. Specialize in a sport, understand have domain knowledge. Like there's no way that
exactly
the best sports bettors, they all, I believe, have domain knowledge. Like if you think of the most extreme example is Billy Walters was doing football for 20 years. You know, mm-hmm. It's like he had people running around to sportsbooks for him, but he wasn't like running back and forth between the Bellagio and the Wynn, just like line shopping,
you know, right, the whole time. Right, exactly. That's what you got to think about. That's that whole mega top down thing is very internet born because, like you said, back in the Billy Walters days, there was no Odd Jam or Pickett to odd shop for you. So, of course, Billy Walters still managed to find great prices for what he did. But a lot of it had to come from domain knowledge because otherwise, for one, he wouldn't even know what a good price was if he had no domain
knowledge.
Right. Because fair value, just calculating like a D-Vig game, that wasn't happening like that back then. So how would he even know if he was getting the best value? And then also, like you said, it's not like he's going along the strip just door to door to door, checking the market price every single minute. It is almost impossible. So we have to understand that, again, the best sports bettors, even through history, have just had way more different levels of expertise than just this mathematical approach. You know? And that's it.
Totally agree. And I do think that I imagine after the tensions release and whatnot that people kind of saw that what you were saying was completely agreeable.
Right.
And I think what it wasn't was it wasn't saying that top down doesn't work. It's top down work.
Of course not. Why would I ever say that? That's
but I thought that was great. And I think it's, you know, I try and be a little too, I'm agreeable on Twitter. So I'm not out there starting too many things, but mm-hmm. I thought that was an important discourse because actually I think it probably connected two communities that were the same community and they didn't realize it.
Oh man, I'm glad you said that because that's exactly my next point is the reason that whole tweet even got born. I didn't just wake up one day and decide, you know, say this super controversial, but should it be controversial thing. I realized the attitude that a lot of the plus EV people were having was kind of condescending, just to be very honest.
Yeah.
And it seemed to kind of just like piss all over a lot of people who have a more bottom up style and are kind of finding value in different ways. When the whole point is that, again, like you said, it's two communities that are kind of doing the same thing, just in slightly different ways. And honestly, if we could combine the two ideas, you're going to get a much more efficient approach. And the crazy thing is, ever since that tweet, I just look back and a lot of plus EV people are kind of doing more bottom-up style things. And it's just like, definitely. Whoa, okay. So the whole time you kind of agreed, really. All right, you know, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, look, you're making waves. I think it was like, it opened the discourse up. And anytime you start thinking about something, you'll probably, if you're a plus EV, if you're doing sports betting to make money, ultimately you want to do the things that make you the most money. And that's what you're doing. That's what the plus EV people are doing. If you were like, wow, I can just go in Odds Jam and make $100,000 a day, JFR would be doing that.
I definitely
like,
wouldn't be
bothering with like bottom up. Like it's not like, you know. So it's just about how are you gonna make the money? How are you gonna find ways? How are you gonna level up your game? Because this good topic is, you know, 2024, this is the first podcast of the new year. We were talking a little bit thinking about what the landscape's going to look like in 2024. And, you know, I think we both agreed that it might get harder and you might have to add new skills. If you're top down, you might need to add some bottom up. If you're bottom up, you might need to add some top down, right?
For sure. Yeah. We're noticing across all these markets, especially a lot of the alt player props markets, the books are finally starting to catch on to what the value really was. And this actually goes into a bit of a philosophy I've had for years.
I love that
honestly, I've been saying this for so long. We should have been slamming these alt props and almost across every sport because they were just too good. They really were. And I kept telling people this won't be the same for very long. So do it while you can. And if we look across the board, all the major sports for sure, NBA, NFL, MLB. If you go back 2 years, these props are like triple the value as to what they are now. It's incredible.
Wow.
There's a lot of multiples of value that have just been like slashed off the board. In first baskets and three pointers for NBA points, MLB, we're talking strikeouts, home runs, just slashed. And that's because honestly, the books didn't have a good idea of the ceiling of players.
Yes.
And
interesting.
A lot of the discourse around fair value relies around the median, right? either using projections or some sort of way to get a median value of what a guy does.
Yep.
And just only focusing on the median ignores the whole concept of range of outcomes. Because, 100%. Of course, there's some guys that are only going to have like the median. Like some guys who just have almost no ceiling, but they have a very strong floor, and they're always going to get this one number like every time for some prop. Cool. But then there's guys who maybe the median's here, but they're either going to have this day or that day. Right? And if you pick one of those guys, you could just only take the alts for the ceiling, because you know if he actually does what he's supposed to do, he's going to probably smash. You know, an NBA player that is probably a good example is Jordan Poole. People always use him because he's a player that's very, very streaky. He's a knucklehead, honestly. But when his shot is on, his shot on, right?
Okay.
So that means this right here is going to make you a lot of money doing that.
Yeah.
And
you don't care about the other section of distribution. Right. It doesn't matter.
Exactly. And the books are slow to that. And I told people that a long time, but the whole top-down approach is going to oftentimes miss that because top-down is very focused on median.
Right.
And you're going to get, you get great value off of that, but you might miss some concepts down the road focusing on that.
I think understanding distribution, like abnormal distributions or like non-standard distributions is incredibly important in sports. And it's something that like a lot of the people that I look up to and learn from talk a lot about. And like, I'm certainly not at a level where I even feel like I understand all the value that can be squeezed out of, you know, the like different types of distributions. And it's something like I'm looking into. So listening to you say that, like that makes a ton of sense. And it isn't something you see in plus EV. That's the thing.
Yeah. It could be, you know, it definitely could be. Sure. It's strange because, we can talk about that 100K slip. I talk about the slip not because I won 100K off of it. That is really not the reason. I talk about the slip because of how I did it.
Right.
Because if you look at that slip, I took two pitchers to hit their max strikeouts and combined them. Why did I get plus $70,000 for that? You just have to think. If you went through baseball the whole year and you took two pitchers max strikeouts from a different
game
and you combined them, you would often get like plus 15,000, plus 20,000-ish, right?
Okay.
And that's on FanDuel, who very often have the best alt props. So, decent deal. Okay. But for some reason, through the whole year, when you did the same game and you combine those two pitchers, max strikeouts, that value just would just triple.
Interesting.
For some reason, FanDuel is assuming there's some negative correlation between two pitchers in the same game maxing out, which
do you know
I don't,
why?
I thought about this for so long and I can't think of a single reason why those two would be negatively correlated. But in fact, I can think of like five reasons why they'd be positively correlated. Strong wind, big ump, a generous ump, big strike zone, exactly. Just two pitchers having a duel. Because honestly, if the game is close and it's like 0-0, the pitchers will probably pitch longer because both pitchers are on, and that means no manager wants to put their bullpen in early and to give up the lead.
Right.
Right.
That's
There's so many reasons why it just worked out. And that wasn't even the first time I hit that idea. I hit that same idea like 2 months earlier for like 40K in a Mariners Angels game. And and that time it blew up, but it didn't blow up enough to where FanDuel shut it down. But the 100K slip after I hit that one, FanDuel took away all the like very highest max alt props because they figured out like, whoa, something's wrong with what we're doing here.
Yeah. And I love the wind idea.
Yeah. There were so many times where I waited for like a Wrigley Field cold, windy and just like hammer the two pitchers. Didn't care who it was. Didn't matter.
Right.
Because I'm getting value. Sense. Yeah.
Right.
And there's angles like that. There are a lot of those that exist that I've found that I've been patched, that I still have, and I'm keeping in my back pocket. And it's not just me. This isn't like a me thing. A lot of the best bottom-up bettors that are on Twitter in that space that I think should get more respect, I found an incredible amount of these angles.
Incredible
amount. I think a popular one that got popularized by Chili Betts on Twitter is the negative correlation between in football.
Yeah.
So take like a receiver's like max yards, and you take his like under receptions. And the idea is you take like a deep shot guy.
Yeah.
And if he gets like one deep pass and then doesn't do much the rest of the game, FanDuel gave you like incredible negative correlation value for that. More than they should. They still do it. And it probably won't last. If you look in like 6 months later in the next NFL season is gone, we shouldn't be surprised because like it's too much value.
So is the theory that if you had a receiver that was more of like a possession receiver, their yards and their receptions are more correlated. Whereas if they're right. like a, you know, a gunner or whatever, exactly. you're going to.
There's okay. plenty of receivers that get two targets a game and right. they're both deep bombs.
You know? Right.
And you could right. even flip it. You can do like if a receiver is very possession and doesn't get much depth on their yards, you can do yep. max receptions under yards. You get the same value. Yeah. I've seen that too.
Yep. That yeah. makes a lot of sense. See, this is, mm-hmm. this is the stuff. This is like what you got to be clicking around. I think, if you listened, I don't know if you listened to the Ed Miller one, but this is like exactly mm-hmm. what Ed Miller talks about. It's just right. these weird situations that aren't normal. Like you might as well not go look at just the middle of the road NFL receiver who just like gets, you know, 6 yards, you know, a target and right. you know, whatever. But right. it's like these weird situations. That's what you're looking for, because the books have to like model all of these props, and they're not putting in each unique distribution or player tendencies. Like they'll be like, a wide receiver is a wide receiver. You know,
how could they possibly, I mean, maybe in a few years, if their operations yeah. get like much bigger, but this is a thing I think people assume too, is that these sports books are just some huge conglomerate mega minds that yep. omniscient beings that somehow know everything. Never got that, but I'll kind of go in my background a bit. So
yeah,
as a career, before I kind of went full time with this, I was an industrial engineer, which,
okay.
and I was a pretty good one, I would say. I went to a lot of Fortune 500 companies, Ford, GM, Tesla, Rivian.
Even though Harris, you don't, Lockheed. Even though you don't know math.
Yeah, right. Even though I'm not a math guy, right? Incredible. And it's so funny because the first time the EV community came at me wasn't even the November thing. It was in July. I was still working. I was at my desk right. at Rivian looking over their major like JPH data. And while someone's yeah. telling me that like I suck at math, I'm like, wow. Incredible. But that's my whole background. And that kind of data analysis was very based on human behavior, because industrial yes. engineering yep. is meant to improve companies' productivity, right? So I'm going mm-hmm. to like manufacturing lines where actual people are assembling cars,
right.
rockets, whatever.
Right.
And we're trying to figure out how they could possibly do it faster. And a lot of that has to do with the actual person who's the operator. We often give them percentages of how efficient they were. So like 100% operator was like super duper amazing. Most people are like around like 70% operation. Okay. And you have to work with that. And
right.
that's the exact context of data yeah. that you have to approach this with, you know? And so go back to the sportsbooks thing. There is no possible way that the teams that the sportsbooks have could analyze all these outcomes, put in all these distributions to get every single outcome. So what they do is they use medians for pretty much everything. And if you're earlier props, you oftentimes will see this, because
yep.
sometimes they just use like, for NBA, let's say, they use like points per game, like something like just yeah. very easy, like easy to beat metric, like when they first drop the line. But then
yeah.
good people bet the line and they're like, oh, okay, well, maybe this points per game thing wasn't very good. We're going to adjust it to that guy, because that guy usually is pretty good. And now the line is good, right? But it's not because the sports books were omniscient and they just knew it. It's because someone told them through their bet,
yep.
hey, yep. like yep. that line, bad, you should change it. And they did, you know?
And that's sports betting. That's what it is. Like I do always, and that like today I was thinking about this because I wrote the post, but it's like sports books. I actually used the word omniscient, but then I deleted it because I have this like word editor that when I write, it's like use a different, it basically wants you to write like a fourth okay. grader. And I think it's like good most of the time.
Okay.
So if anyone,
fair enough. It is Twitter. So like, probably the best.
It's, what's it called? Hemingway. I actually highly recommend it. Okay. I know you're right. You're starting to do a little more long.
Yeah.
Form, okay. So I'd recommend
trying it. Yeah. Inspired by you. Like I said,
I do appreciate that. Yeah. And like, but yeah, it's like, it's so defeatist and it's wrong to even think, because one, where are the best sports bettors? Are they working at the sports books? They are not. Right. They are not. They would not, yeah. it wouldn't be worth it for them. Like if money wise, it's not worth it. So exactly. all of the best sports bettors don't work at sports books. And the sports books are trying to get their information and they have pretty good sports bettors there who have to do a lot of things. They have to get up 1,000 lines a day. They have to monitor, you know, the customer flow. They have to report to their like cranky boss every time something random happens. Their incentives aren't even like aligned at each level of the sports book. So they're not going to be even trying to be the sharpest better out there. It's not even their main goal. Right. They're just trying to get something up that works, that can take a lot of bets and make money and probably take some market share from their rival. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
And we think it's like, we think it's all about us. They're trying to beat us. You know, like they don't even really care too much about us. They care a little bit. I'll intro us back. So, yep, the classic cranberry juice, camera overheating. Anyone hit me up in the DMs if you know how to fix this. But yeah, we were talking about, you know, how the sports, you know, thinking about sports betting from the sportsbook's point of view.
Right.
And understanding like they're human. As you were working with data that was very human driven, this is like the same thing we're working with. There's right. a lot of nuance and imperfection, and you know, don't limit yourself by thinking these places are omniscient. You know, these exactly. all powerful books. They're just exactly. like us.
And you know, I think a lot of people come from a good place when they kind of try to suggest that the books are very good, because I mean,
yes.
they are in a very like average sense. The books are very good, and you don't Correct. Want people to just donate learning hard lessons. But I also think that there's a side to it where you don't want to discourage people from learning, because then you start saying things like that. Oh, your research is useless. Why are you even trying? The books are too good. You'll never beat them. Like, and it's sports betting accounts that have told me that. I'm like, wait, hold on. Aren't you trying to do this too? But
right.
anyway, like you could research and get an edge. It's about what you research. It's about how you're approaching it and how you're using that data to fit your narrative, to fit your angle. It's a lot of people just don't do great research, as it turns out. And that's honestly not a novel idea to sports betting. That's kind of through history been true. If you just look at any other aspect of almost anything,
yeah, true. That's
people just don't do great research. And that's true for sports betting as well. And the best sports bettors have just learned the hard lessons, learned what works and doesn't work, and they just don't use bad data. They're not
yep.
looking in game logs for the last time these teams played 4 years ago to see what happened. No one cares. They're focusing on advanced stats, focusing on things that can project for future yep. performance,
yep.
looking for trends and people yep. coming up. And again, it goes back to how could a single mini conglomerate of a sports book ever keep track of all these things? You know, players getting called up in like in rookie years and stuff, yeah. and we don't really know how they're going to perform. Players right. that who are veterans have come back to the game, and do yeah. they remember how good they were 2 years ago? Are they still good now? Or are they tracking how they looked in rehab practices? How could they possibly
Certainly
do
not.
All that, man? Come on. Like, you have
were
to
they listening?
At a certain point.
No, as you say, were they listening to every coach interview or like, you know, understanding how when one player talks, what that means, you know, mm-hmm. is that high minutes talk or is that talk for I'm getting low minutes or whatever it is, you know,
right.
I'm sure that that's important.
Exactly. There's no way. There's times where an NBA, like let's say I check my phone right now and some player got downgraded yeah. to questionable. Sometimes yeah. the books will still get the props up.
Yep.
I mean, they got much better at that. They used to be sure. awful at it, but still right. to this day, like when a guy gets downgraded questionable, they almost always sit. And the books just leave the prop up. And
yeah.
it's almost like a free roll because, okay, yeah. now you got the prop like the guy was in, so it,
right.
it can't be that bad. And if the guy sits, he's got like amazing value for free.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
There's so many things like that still exist to this day, you know?
There's definitely free roll spots. That's mm-hmm. it. It's something actually we haven't talked about on this podcast, but I think you know, there's lots of spots where as a bettor, you can kind of manufacture like a synthetic free roll. And that's edge too.
Of course.
It's about exactly. all the tools. It's about all the tools. It's not, you're not going to see a free roll from an odds screen, but you will sometimes find, like JFAR is saying, a free roll if you're following what's actually going on.
Yeah.
We found that in golf for sure. Like a couple of free roll spots. That's, you know, totally fine. And then the mega free roll, this is a great free roll that some of our sportsbook friends won't love, is if a sportsbook, if you have like a VIP connection on a sportsbook and they post a line and it's like wrong or the player name's misspelled or something, you can always try and get your money back.
Yeah, refund.
If you lose, you're like, look, this bet was wrong. Like,
what's wrong with that, man? An angle is an angle.
Come on, you know, you got to use all the tools, man. You got to use all the tools. I think that's why I found talking with you so interesting, because it's like you're thinking outside the box. We're talking about different things that don't just go to devigging. And like, I think devigging is important. Learn how to devig. Learn how to devig.
And properly devig. And this is one thing I'll say about myself. Yep. I'll never pretend to be an expert in something I'm not. I am not an expert in devigging. But I also think that a lot of people are thinking they're experts at devigging, but they're not. Devigging lines that the other side almost never gets bet on. Devigging lines that just don't really make sense to devig. Like a lot of like home runs, goals, all these things where no one's betting no home run. No one's ever doing that. So how sharp can no home run really be? So you're going to devig off of that and say, hey, all home runs suck. Don't play them.
The juice is not equal on each side.
Right.
That's a fact. I promise. The juice is if you're out there devigging right now, the juice is not evenly distributed. It is not. Mm-hmm. There's actually a side that probably still doesn't have juice because the number got steamed one bump up to that number. And that number is still value because the group that steamed it put the true value even higher than the number got bumped up to. So if a number's gotten steamed in a direction, the juice is certainly not evenly distributed. And if you're de-juicing that, you're often going to be finding negative EV bets. So it's like, I try and warn people of this.
That's real. So here's an interesting example, right? Let's say I had a conglomerate somehow. I don't. Sure. But let's say I do. And we woke up and we saw this pitcher get listed at 3.5 strikeouts. We're like, oh, this pitcher's a freaking animal. And he's pitching 6 innings or more.
Yep.
So we're going to definitely bet this, right? Oh, books see that. Now it's raised to 4.5. Off your example, a lot of people, if someone were to post 4.5 later on Twitter, they might get made fun of. Oh, this line was 3.5.
Yeah.
But now the pitcher goes out and gets 8 strikeouts. What do you say? Oh, well, there's variance. You got lucky.
Yeah.
Next 5 starts, 8 strikeouts or more.
Now what?
Okay, well, it timed out. That was line 7.5. And all this time, we should have been betting it the whole time. Honestly,
What's even worse is if you move it on one book or whatever, and people devig the 3.5, they take the under on the 4.5 when the syndicate that moved it had their true value at like 5, 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're going under 4.5, and it's not only not profitable, but it's a huge loser.
Exactly. You know, it's like, and you'll never really know just off of that. You'll never know. And you'll attribute it to just bad luck.
That's
an interesting thing. I mean, that's fine. You know, variance exists, but that is kind of the whole crux of the whole argument, isn't it? Is that variance exists. So to act like you could solve this whole mathematical equation with an incredible amount of variables. That's a whole new level of calculus that I took a lot of math courses and I didn't learn that one. You know, I took a lot of advanced math and wow, you're incredible if you could do that. I mean, you can get close, of course.
Yeah.
You get close.
And it's fun to try. I agree. Like bottom up is fun. When you're thinking about that, when you're looking at the Wrigley Field, oh, is it cold or whatever? Mm-hmm. And you go out and you test your hypothesis, right? You're like, you know, I'm putting money into play based on an opinion, based on some angle I found, and it works. It's just like the money's worth like 10 times in happiness to the money you make from just like a steam chase or a devig. And go make your money. Money is actually should all be worth the same, and go make a lot of money and, you know, save for retirement. I'm not saying don't do these things, but I am saying it's fun. Give it a try on the side.
Why not do
just
both?
Just dip your toes. Yeah, why not do both?
Why not do both? If you're doing sports betting like for real full time, you could do both. Even if you haven't, even if you're working, you know, longest time, I traveled for work. So for the longest time, I was like, I came home like almost every weekend because I had my girl, my family. So I would fly to the Midwest for work on like Sunday night.
Yep.
Wake up super early, go to work. I worked like 10 hours. I made good money, but I worked a lot. Came back, did my bets, all that. Friday, flew back. And I was doing bets in airports and stuff. I made it work. You could definitely make it work. And the thing of what you said about how that kind of bottom up style is sometimes worth 10 times more in happiness. It also could be worth 10 times more in money if you find a game breaking angle.
Yes.
And I will very often say that finding a game breaking angle from a top down way is a lot harder to do than vice versa from the other side. And if you look at that 100K flip again, that was a game breaking angle because I just bet. I didn't bet every single pitcher from every game. I was selective and picked spots where I think worked.
Right.
But in my head, I'm like, if I hit one of these, I can make life-changing money.
Right.
And I hit two of them. I mean, God bless. But that was a game-breaking angle that I'm not even sure will exist anymore. But, I mean, the whole top-down approach, that'll always be there. And that's just great, solid money.
Yes.
But how game-breaking can it be? You know?
Keeps the lights on.
And that's keeps great. And that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing. And I never want to knock that. That's amazing.
I agree. And, you know, same here. Now that, back to your pitcher slip, because now this is something that me and my, like my betting partner talk about. It's, you figure this angle out and you're like, this is definitely good because you're like, okay, why is this negatively correlated? You're getting 3X a return. It must be super negatively correlated. I can't figure out why it is. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know exactly what the correlation is, but I know it's good. So when, you know, JFAR sees that bet, he doesn't have a fair. He has an idea. You have an idea, right?
Exactly.
But you're like, I'm going to still bet it because I know it's good. I might not know how good, but I'm certainly betting it. And I do think that's something that I wanted to push people towards, like a lot of people who come from the odd screens and whatnot. I find it hard to kind of push them out into situations where they're taking risks without a fair. But all of the biggest spots, I think you won't know the fair, but you'll know it's good. So you have to have a plan in place when that comes up to bet it, or else you're just like gonna miss out on these big, big opportunities.
Very, very well said, GP. And I think the reason that you'll never have a fair is because those whole game-breaking angles are often unprecedented. There's often not historical data to go back and say, hey, you know, this worked because of that. The book's probably messed up somewhere. And if you do find that, how can you know that you found it if you're just relying on only going up affairs? That's tough.
That's exactly right.
That's tough. And that's where domain knowledge does come in. Because if you're the first man to climb Everest, you better have a flag in your hand. Why would you do all that work and be the first person there and you don't even know what to do with it? You better have a flag to put down. Come on now. Like, you can't just walk to the mountaintop and claim yourself a prophet without even know how to recite a Bible verse or something. You know, it's just, you got to be very careful with spots like that, you know?
Dude, if you're the first man that climbs Everest, you better have a fucking flag. Love that. Oh my
God. What was the whole point in the first place then?
Yeah. Dude, you know? And that is a bigger, it has a bigger impact than people think, because so you hit a 100K slip and a 40K slip. I'm thinking back to our last year, we had a couple spots where, you know, the books didn't understand something about what was happening in golf. One weekend was 100K. One was 80K. And like, we didn't make like $5 million last year. Those weekends made up a big, big portion of what, you know, what we did. And so it was the year before as well. You know, same thing. It's okay to have, you know, some chunky profits, and that's how it works, I think. Like, I found in trading, your year is going to be made up of a couple amazing spots, a couple amazing days. And then you're keeping the lights on in between.
Exactly. And people oftentimes hate when I do parallels to trading, because people see sports betting as is way more taboo than trading. So they often hate that. But there's so many parallels between the two.
Same thing.
So many. Like, and it's exactly like you said. Like, I mean, if you're a great trader, you're going to oftentimes catch the market when it's bull or bear. You're going to be able to play the trend and you're going to make good money, right? But off of playing that trend, you're going to catch one or two just crazy boomers or a crazy short, either way.
Yeah.
And that's going to, like you said, make up a majority of your profit. And in those flash moments, you got to make the right decision. and because just missing out on that is, you're talking about EV. That's an incredible loss of EV.
Yes. When
he missed out on that moment.
Yes.
Are you kidding me?
Yes.
Incredible loss of EV.
Yes. It's like, it's like being a tournament player and having a terrible, like, shorthanded poker game.
Mm-hmm. Because
the payouts in tournaments are so highly distributed at, up top. If you're trash at four or three-handed heads up, when you get there, the EV you're losing per hand by being bad at that in those situations is so high. Because you're playing now for, like, you know, a couple hundred buy-ins.
Exactly.
You're playing three-handed for, you know.
It's a classic example of, like, when a huge cash game player, like, thinks they're the shit and then, like, goes to tournaments and tries to, like, do a whole year of tournaments. They're making all these ICM mistakes all of a sudden and they're just giving up, like, place value for no reason. And all of a sudden they go broke. It's like, you know, those little things are so huge when it's in, like, a very volatile, high-pressure moment.
And you know what?
You gotta capitalize.
That cash game player... Because I know cash game players, and I don't know if any poker crowd has migrated over to here, but Jafar and I both played. Those cash game players think the tournament players suck. They're like, these people suck.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Yeah, they definitely suck at deep stack, but like they know where their money comes from. So I think knowing where your money comes from is so important, and like realizing that when your money might be coming from a couple big spots a year, you start to think differently about sports betting, in my opinion.
I completely agree. And like the whole keep the lights on thing is, again, it's so crucial because I think it gives you the confidence that when you believe you found a real spot to actually get the money in and get it in good, you know?
Yes.
Because if you didn't have that, it would be a lot more difficult to say, hey, you know, I can't really afford to keep following this spot, you know?
Yep.
Because,
yep.
I mean, like the same baseball slip plus 70,000. Yeah, I got great value, but I'm still not going to hit it very often. I got to play it out, you know? I'm not going to hit the first, second, third, one or two.
Yeah.
Come on now. Obviously. Like, that's not how – I can't just hit it the first time.
You know what's crazy is there's probably people on Twitter that's like thought that you hit that as your one slip. That's crazy.
And there's also people that think I played it so much that I lost money on it.
Oh,
like,
dude,
I played 72,999 slips of it. Are you kidding me? Like, bro. Like, it's incredible. It's incredible.
The other thing about the keeping the lights on conversation is, like, you have to be in the market to even have that. So you're like, you got to have the bankroll and keep the bankroll, but you also have to be logging in and tracking. Exactly. Because the thing is, it's going to pop up. So you go about your betting process. Most days you'll find a couple small spots, but if you keep putting yourself there, you keep putting yourself in position and you keep trying to be thoughtful about what you're doing, the spot will kind of come to you.
Exactly.
Like, it won't come to you because you have to do the work of being there, but it will come to you as in, like, it will show itself if you're doing enough.
I very often say one of the best things you can do as a sports bettor is just memorize what each player's lines was for each, like, preceding day on each sports.
Yeah.
If you can. It's a lot.
That's
but
hard,
if you but just know this guy,
yeah.
Like, if I know this pitcher is like a 4.5 strikeout guy every time, like, that's what the books are giving him.
Yeah.
One day I wake up, he's 2.5. No reason why. Okay.
Right.
Great. You can just take it. You don't have to,
right.
You don't have to wait for, like, more information
to
come
out. Lineup
to that.
Come out. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, you're good.
Like, it's not a lineup of the best hitters who's ever lived.
Right.
Like,
exactly. If you play 9 Barry Bonds, then maybe I might fade it. But most likely it's going to be some average baseball team, and okay, you're good.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So, and that is a huge benefit. I think that's actually one of the things that I've made the most money off of, just as a kind of, it's like a reactionary thing, is just knowing what the books are listing a player at all the time, because sometimes they'll just mess up. Especially, let's say a player gets injured for a bit, they come back.
Yep.
And the books kind of, like, sometimes they forget what they had him at. It's weird. You know, they will just list them a lot softer. Even like 2 games back from the injury, just listing them like softer and just waiting to be smashed, you know? And then they'll revert it back to the line.
Exactly. Like,
oh, wait.
They're like, oh, fuck. Right. Dude, the panic button. Dude, that's the case in golf. And I'll try not to talk too much about golf on here, but I will say the injury angle is true for all things. Like, another thing sports books, my favorite quote from Ed Miller is like, if you're watching a game and there's a flag that's thrown and it's challenged, the sportsbook doesn't have a data feed that says challenge likely to be overturned. But if you understand the game, you certainly know if the challenge is likely to be overturned, right?
It's a good one. Yeah.
And everyone can relate to that. Mm. What I'm saying is, like, a sports book doesn't really have a feed being like, this player who's now injured was playing actually injured for 10 games. They don't know. Mm-hmm. But if you're following, you might know. You might realize, oh, that was the game where, you know, so-and-so elbowed him in the back. And then he started playing a few, you know, less minutes. And then he went out with a back injury for 2 months. Well, those 10 games probably aren't very representative of who that is as a player, but they're the most recent 10 games in the sportsbook sample. And when he comes back, they might be the games
they're gonna go off of that. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, not always, but
no.
if the player is very famous or very well known to be able to smash their line, then they'll probably be okay with it. But for the more low key guys, yeah,
definitely
very often, that can happen. You know,
definitely. And do you find yourself often like you talked about Jordan Poole? I think Jordan Poole is like well known, but well known for being kind of like a wild
and knucklehead. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Pretty much.
But are you often finding yourselves just tracking? You know. You're not, you know, sitting there tracking LeBron all day, I'm sure, or like Clayton Kershaw.
No, I mean, I do the best I can, man. That's what I always say, and that's what I encourage everyone to do. I look at a lot of film. I don't look at every film. I look at a lot of possessions, but I can't read every play, and I never will try to. I'm just looking for the thing that it goes back to knowing when you're right. And this is a philosophy I have in life in general. I never speak unless I know I'm right. I think people a lot of times just speak. Even if they don't really know they're right, just make like a very bold statement and something they don't know a lot about for some reason. And I just tend to not do that because why would you do that? So I just wait until all my boxes are checked and then I go forward. I don't need to go in a spot where like I think I might be right. It's unless I think there's as much value at the end of the tunnel there sometimes. Sure. But for the most part, I'm just doing what falls into my bucket and I'm not worried about, you know, things I don't know how to calculate or things I can't really predict. Why? You know, I'm making pretty good money off of doing the things I do. So I just do it, you know?
Oh, man, that is so spot on because it's interesting. I think like that too often. I often think I'm too reserved, but I just have this thought that you're saying, it's like, why risk it? If this isn't my area of expertise, either betting or, you know, speaking, I'll listen to someone who I think clearly, like if we're talking and you say something about basketball or baseball, I'm not going to be like, you're wrong. I'm going to listen to you. And then I'm sure if I said something about golf, you'd probably be like, I'll probably take that for now I go into the weeds, you know?
Right.
And that's a great way to live life is it's less energy, you know, find people who know what they're talking about, know what you don't know. Speak when you're right, listen when you're wrong. Like, you know, those are universal truths.
And especially in sports betting, man, that is the difference between thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
It's just having the right circle. You know how many times people just reach out to me saying, hey, and it even just plus EV people. I've gotten some great ARBs.
Yeah.
Amazing ARBs for plus EV people. Like talking like 40 cents difference in ARBs.
Dude.
It's like, hey, you should go bet this. Like, of course I'm going to do it. Thank you. Appreciate you, bro. I have no reservations against anything. All I want to do is surround myself with smart people, like people, and share information because that way we all make a profit and we can all find a great way to really capitalize on this opportunity that is internet era mobile app sports betting that won't last forever. Yep. I keep saying this. It's not going to last forever.
I know.
This is a thing is free money just on your phone. It's not going to last. It'll just get progressively harder. And it is. So
it's like when people come to me and they'll be like betting Quarter Kelly on the like underdog correlation slips.
Right.
It's like, stop it. You don't need to bet Quarter Kelly there. Hey,
it's, I emptied my bank. When I found out Prize Picks let you stack quarterbacks of football, I emptied my bank. Are you kidding me? What?
Exactly.
Max
exactly.
Bet every time. You're not going to limit me.
Like, it's like you're sitting there like, what's Quarter Kelly? It's like in that time you could have put out three more iterations of that lineup. Just
exactly.
Go.
Exactly.
It's like, and there's something like that's the example of knowing you're right, like you said. Because in that situation, you 100% know you have an edge. And this goes into Kelly and how you bet size and whatnot. But when you have a correlated parlay that books don't allow, that other sites are reducing the payout on, that the math is just so clear and clear cut and not really having to, it's not really like situational. You know, you have an edge. When you know you have an edge, then you can bet closer to Kelly. And this will be a whole nother discussion on Kelly, but like, it matters when it, like, sizing isn't controlled necessarily by the edge you have, but it's by how confident you are you do have an edge. What's the edge you know you have? What's the edge you think you have about 75% confidence in or whatever? It's like, right, gauging that, right? And exactly, a correlated parlay, you know it's an edge. That's, don't bet Quarter Kelly. Man. Don't bet Quarter Kelly. Yeah, there's no, please, there's no reason to bet Quarter Kelly there.
Not even a second thought. You know?
Yeah.
Get the money in. Get it in good. Get it in now.
Before you can't anymore. You think, I mean, the fact that Underdog let it go for so long.
I can't,
so
many years, bro. I knew it got blew up a lot in the Plus EV community, like in the past, like let's say half a year. It's been there for years.
Right.
Years.
Yeah, I was doing it last year.
Even before the props, you could do a fantasy score. When Prospects didn't have props, you could do fantasy score. Same like thing, that, dude.
Years.
I was there, bro. I don't want to talk about multi-accounts too much, but let's do Prize Picks.
Betting partners. Betting partners.
I had a lot of partners. I was something like Magic Johnson in the 80s. Let's just say I have a lot of partners. Because, dude, you kidding me? No, man. That was, dude, and they gave, like, you a match every time. Like, dude, come on.
Yeah.
Free.
Yeah. We're out there helping people. We're, what I call it is private touting. You're giving people information and they're betting, you know.
Exactly.
Whatever. They're betting on their accounts. That's fun. Exactly. Dude, yeah. I mean, I do think that figuring out when to hit the gas and when to kind of pull the brakes is something that comes with time. So I'm not like, by being like, you should smash these situations. I do, you know, understand that people are very nervous when they first start gambling. The downside is they start getting overconfident, smashing bad situations.
Right.
All right. We're back again.
Let's do it.
Anyway, we were talking, I think that was probably my favorite discussion around fair and uncertainty that I've had yet. That was awesome. I really would encourage people who, you know, might be a little newer or even experienced, like, re-listen to that. Think about how it applies to your process. This is important stuff. This is high leverage stuff that will get you ready to take advantage of these big spots, like Jay Farr and I were talking about. So give that a listen back. Now I want to talk about Beat the Books. Jay Farr is a co-owner of Beat the Books Discord. You want to just talk about how that started?
And yeah, for about? Sure. It's actually a crazy story. So as some people might know, I'm a co-partner with my good friend Joke. And we actually had met through Madden, the football game. We were both like competitive players. He's like a champion in it.
Okay. And, oh, sick.
Yeah. That was like around 2018, 2019 is when I kind of stopped doing that. Okay. I got focused into my career and stuff. But I actually started betting really seriously around that time as well. Mainly because my job took me to the Midwest where I could legally bet. It was very, very easy. You know, so I was doing my thing for a few years, showing some good results, improving my process. And then one day on Twitter, I just looked, and this is when like the whole FanDuel era was like at peak, like you were getting best prices for everything. People were just hitting crazy stuff. Yep. And I saw Joke put a Discord out, and it was just a Discord like him and some friends, just like live bets and some cool stuff. So I just joined up. It was called Beat the Books at the time.
Okay. Wow.
Stay and the yeah, the name just is stuck. So it was not even 100 of us in the Discord just posting plays. And eventually we just realized that, I mean, Joke was very good. Obviously I was doing my thing and he just saw me just posting a bunch of winning bets.
Right.
And he's like, dude, like, do you want to like just make a channel here? I'm like, all right, sure.
Yeah.
And we just kept it just as a community just for like, I think it started in like January and up until August of that year, it was completely just free. You could just join.
Right.
And it was cool. But then we had too many people like maintain it as a free thing. And I know no matter how you phrase something like that, it sounds money grabby, but we had legitimately like 30K people, maybe more.
Holy shit.
A free Discord tailing everything. Like it was almost impossible to really like make it work, you know?
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah. No.
30K.
It was a lot. It was a lot, man. And so we definitely decided that, hey, you know what? We see that some people are doing paid groups. We're just going to try this out. And the results spoke for themselves, dude. Even in the free tracking phase, I was up like through the half a year, like maybe 100 something units, 150. Yeah, I think.
Crazy.
And just NBA and MLB, joke was up like 100. Like, we are obviously showing very good results. And I mean, the market was softer back then. It was easier. Showing great results. And eventually over time, we just started making more friends, meeting more very sharp people. People wanted to join our thing. And it kind of birthed itself very, very naturally.
Yeah,
and that's what I like about it. The whole intention of Beat the Books was never to like make a paid group. It was just make good plays.
Right.
And track everything, make good plays, show that we can profit and just for people. And it was great.
Yeah.
And there's still people to this day that even if they didn't join the paid one, they will say, hey, I don't do the paid thing, but when it was free, they were incredible. I still think they're incredible.
That's great.
And to this day, we track every single day. We have a spreadsheet that links directly to Discord that shows in a bot like win loss for every single play. You know we're not missing anything. You can go back and check every day to see if it accumulates. It does. And just this year alone, we have like, I think, plus 1,357 units between everybody. Obviously, you don't tail everybody, so like we're not saying that you're gonna get that.
But, sure.
I mean, most people in the Discord are up at least 100. I did finish around 441.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's a big chunk of that.
I finished 426. I mean, dude, if you've been around, like you definitely, I think it's worth it. It's weight and not only profit you can make off the bets, but also information. Because we found a lot of the great angles over the past few years as well, you know, and there are certain slips that, like, for example, that baseball angle, it didn't nuke. Like, the whole thing of it was that even if I placed it and posted it and people met it wouldn't really nuke. Sometimes it went up. It was glitched. It was weird. So people oftentimes actually hit it with me, like, very, very, very strong odds.
Right.
And that is just the best feeling, you know. I felt incredible that day, not only because obviously I won a bunch of money, but other people won really life-changing money off of like an angle I found, you know. Crazy feeling.
The best feeling. An epic feeling. And that's the thing about your style, which I think lends itself well to doing what you do in the Discord, is you're trying to find angles. And the angles are different than a DVIG or a Steam chased move, which you could put out and two people might get, you know, if you have a play that's, you know, a bit more original, it's going to stick around for more people. And
that's very, very realistic.
It's a difficult part of like, I'm kind of in that early stage of what you guys had in Beat the Books. Like I built a Discord literally just because I had gotten kicked off the Prize Picks Reddit. And I was like, posting, I guess I had like built a little bit of a following, posted winning plays for golf, and I was kind of like trash talking them a little bit because they had like limited me as like, you're so soft and just giving my plays away. Everybody come, let's just all beat them, whatever. Get kicked off, start the Discord because, you know, we had built like in the Reddit comments like a little bit of a community. And right now when you said 30, like we're like 2300. It's, you know, it's free. Awesome. I enjoy hanging out there. The point is, like, we find, just like you, there's people who've come in, posted their edges, who are like specialists in a sport. They're not doing the traditional, on the screenplays. We get to tail them. That's kind of what it's about. At 2,300, it's hard to keep it free. At 30,000, you cannot keep it free. I promise. So if you're, that's like,
we really stuck it out like as long as we could. If we really want to like analyze it, I know, again, people will never see it that way just because of what it turned into. But man, dude, I was working too.
Right.
Doing it for free. I was working a very hard job while
you had
coming
three
home.
Jobs. Like, you had three jobs, basically.
Basically, dude. What?
Yeah.
It was a lot. And I'm glad a lot of people ate when it was free for sure. Some of those people did transition to being paid. But even if you did it, like, I'm just happy, you know, that a lot of people ate off that because it was a great era. I miss that era of like NBA when the props are so fresh and you can just hit crazy things all the time.
Yeah.
And this is what I always say about the people who have just, I don't know why the alt prop market just had been so shunned on. Man, back in that day, let's say an NBA player's max prop was like plus 1,200. You could take an alternate spread for that game. So let's say LeBron James had a 35-point thing for like plus 1,200. You could take that prop, add Lakers plus like 40, the biggest alt spread.
And
the odds are triple. Why?
And you're like, wait, what?
You get plus 3,000 all of a sudden. So not only did LeBron would have to score 35 and Lakers still get blown out somehow for you to like not get that value.
That's crazy.
So for every one in like 10,000 times that happened, then sure, I guess it was bad.
Yeah.
But besides that, you got free money. And it was, man, that was such a good era.
Yeah. Dude, there's all this fun shit. I do think it'll get tighter, but I also am optimistic, having been through poker and DFS and whatever, that, you know, if you're thinking the right way about risk and, you know, risk and betting and whatever, just whatever it is, there'll be spots. There's always going to be spots. It's important to, you know, I think that's why I really enjoyed like our conversation now and before, is like, it's not as much about like, this is my slip. It's like, how are you thinking about that? How do you build that slip? Exactly. And those lessons, I always say, it's like those lessons, if you learn those lessons, but you make $5,000, and someone else doesn't learn those lessons, but they kind of make 10K, like kind of mindlessly betting, you made more with $5,000. That extra $5,000 over the course of your life will be like $1,000,000 or something.
100%.
Like just, you know, so
anyone can get lucky. I mean,
for like, sure.
It's never can be about a slip, because anyone can hit a slip. Man, I could go right now and just bet everything all at once and post a slip on Twitter later and say it's up and crazy. But what would that do? Nothing. You know, it's about why did I pick this one specific slip? Why did I picking the same exact idea down the line? And that way we prepare ourselves for like any type of market, you know, because again, like having one style that can get like patched or something, I mean, that's great for while it exists. But then what about when it's gone? You know?
Yeah. The existential dread is much higher.
I said something messed up back when the EV wars were at like full temperature. Is I said
no.
I wish Underdog would just get rid of correlation already. So and that was messed up. I'll admit it.
Okay. I
didn't want that either, to be honest. But it was just kind of to like get that point across too. Like, okay, so what are we gonna do if the DFS books go away and we're back to like normal stuff?
Yeah,
you know. And it kind of did happen. Like, I might have wished it into existence. I apologize.
No, I think Underdog was actually trying to not go bankrupt.
Right. Yeah. That too, because they definitely were just handing money away. But
I'd love to have sat in on one of those investor meetings.
Be a fly on the wall in those meetings. Yeah.
So you lost $3 million on the British Open. that would have been too fun. And I do actually like Underdog. I appreciate they fought the good fight for so long, trying not
they
to
really did. People and whatnot. They really did. And you know,
they have good hearts.
They really, as far as the FS books go, they let you bet. They let you get in there. And I give a props for that, dude.
Definitely.
I
really do. Definitely.
Like max, I think like max 2,000s.
Yeah.
Before, like,
that's right. I was tailing somebody in NBA doing like 2,000 a pop, having no clue what I was doing, but I knew that the guy was good, and it was great.
Money off it. Yeah, exactly. There you go.
And they were
so when it comes to beat the books, man, that's kind of our whole thing, is that we're very focused on the how as to why we're betting something. We're definitely focused on transparency and tracking.
Yes.
It should be a bare minimum, in my opinion. And it's really about, you know, like the long term thing, and that sometimes that's tough for like, let's say a very average person. If you're paying a monthly thing and the return isn't necessarily guaranteed, it's not. I can never sit here and tell you that
it
pays for a month right now that I win that month. That's impossible.
Yep.
I mean, it's likely, but
right.
I mean, especially like when I'm at the top, when I'm at the very top, and Barry's just like yelling at me from the bottom, like, hey, come back down.
I'm like, you got to keep these places in business.
But I think getting the real value is getting what we're talking about right here, is understanding the angle of how you're going to make money over time from these guys. And dude, if you leave us and you feel like you could do it on your own, great. I'd almost prefer that. I'd almost prefer that, because if you just feel like you do it on your own, you don't even need us. Good. Great. You took something from it and you can use that, and now you can be a soldier on your own.
Nothing wrong. Dude, awesome.
Because again, this opportunity is so unprecedented. I keep saying this because I really want to hammer it down.
Yes.
Is that throughout history, throughout financial history, not really been a tie like this. Like, there's been two groundbreaking things in like the past decade as crypto and sports betting that have actually just been completely groundbreaking. And now crypto's, I mean, I don't know how you feel about that. I mean,
it doesn't have the same multiplier as it did back then,
but sports betting was at its crux for a long time. When I was telling people, hey, get in on this. You can make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's kind of why I made that purchasing link post, is I feel like a lot of people got held back.
The episode's too hot. This is what I just told JFAR. The camera this is unprecedented heat levels. The camera's flamed up four times now. But yeah, I want to kind of wrap it up and, you know, give you a big thank you, because we were just talking. Actually, I just told JFAR I left the room during one of the camera breaks, and told my wife, I was like, this is my favorite one yet. This is the best one yet. And I really do believe it. And I love all my past guests, but I have enjoyed where this conversation went. And I think it'll be very useful for people who are listening, who might be on that precipice of their top down. They've gotten the devigging down. They've built the confidence of winning at books. You know, they've gotten the reps. They know the books can be beaten. And I get this in my DMs all the time, but like, what's next? And I think this episode was the what's next, at least the first step into what's next that I've done on this podcast. So I think you're going to help a lot of the people who are actually like in the audience as of right now, because my audience, from what I've seen, is mostly people kind of looking to make that jump. So thank you. You know,
awesome, man, dude, I had a blast. And I'll wrap up with saying this. First of all, thank you for all the great content you're providing. It's a great mixture of, just to make it basic, top down and bottom up. And I think that's, again, what we're striving for.
Yes.
And one last thing I would say is I really applaud you, because I tend to get this energy from a lot of really good sports bettors. They want to keep everything close to the chest.
Yep.
And I get it, because, you know, dude, you don't want your money-making ways to be patched. But I have very, very high respect for the people who understand that and still want to share knowledge. Because in my head, it's an inevitability for people to really like get better at this. There's too much info out nowadays to really want to gatekeep. And I really try my best to not do that. And I really applaud you for also sharing out and, you know, doing the good thing, you know?
Dude, I appreciate it. And I will say, like, I was that person before. You know, I was pretty private through my gambling career. And the most fun part of my gambling career has been more public, starting the Discord, helping people out, seeing other people win, sweating bets together. Like, if you haven't done it yet, try it. It's really fun. You know, it's really fun. You
can't beat it. It's worth pounds more in happiness, like GP said, for sure.
Dude, 100%. And JFAR, we're going to be getting, you know, he put a long form piece out. I believe it was yesterday. A wonderful tweet. I retweeted it. If you're not following JFAR, you know, go follow him and read it on his timeline. But, you know, I know that you're making a push to do some more long form. And I can't wait to,
for sure, man,
till the tables are turned and, you know, I might be on your channel or we're talking
the first one.
On your platform. I'm
you
in.
Might be the first one, man.
I'm in. You know, for maybe we do it live. You know, we're pretty close in geography. So I don't know. Stay tuned for you know, some crazy 2024 stuff I would love to do. And definitely, see, man, you know, whatever you get up to, I know it's going to be good. So all of JFAR's links are going to be in the show notes. So that's going to be his Twitter, and then Beat the Books and anything else, you know, that you've got going on, we'll throw in there. And thank you again. Thanks everyone for listening. I hope that you enjoyed this as much as I did, because, you know, to the audience, because this was a total banger, and I'm going to re-listen to it myself, because I think that the amount of information here, the amount of help, it's just like unprecedented, I think, for this show. So thank you again. Thanks everyone for watching, and we will see you on the next episode.